All right, everyone, welcome to this week's edition of Free For All. I am your host, Big John, and for a lot of reasons, folks, it's just been one of those weeks, one thing after another. And if you throw in the personal, the work, the activity in the world today, I wouldn't blame anyone for feeling a little run down and or hectic. Welcome. If it's Thursday night, if it's 10 o'clock on the East Coast, 7 o'clock on the West Coast, anywhere in between at that same point, then it's time for Free For All. It's time for some libertarian talk. I'm joined, as always, by my handsome and well-read host, co-host, Mr. Hody Johns. Hody, how you doing tonight?
Yeah, almost always my default answer is that I'm doing really well. In truth, I am doing really well, but it's been heavy the last couple days, and I would be lying to say I don't feel the air of gross, I guess. Like, just kind of a gross feeling descending over America right now. And
but you're not you haven't succumbed to that feeling, have you?
No, I'm basically immune to it. I think I'm thankfully we're going to have a fellow Christian biblical enthusiast here on the show with us today, and he'll understand that I'm whistling to the gallows like a lot of the New Testament folks did. And I think that's just part of the joy in my heart. I'm grateful that God gave it to me. But I still recognize the gallows as gallows, I guess. You know, it registers in my head. I don't feel as bad as maybe some others do.
All right, I'll just stick to the gallows humor because I think that's what I'm built for. So we'll stick to that. Everyone, we're here on Free For All, Grumblings Media, grumblingsmedia.com. Also, you can check us out on Rumble, YouTube, Facebook, X. Just look for at Grumblings Media. It's the same everywhere. Happy to have you join us. Say hello to all our viewers. If you have any questions, comments, or feedback during the show, hit us up in the chat. The only rule we have is please, no four-letter words if you want to get on the screen. And tonight I'd like to introduce our special guest for the evening. His name is Jacob Winograd. I hope I pronounced that right, Jacob.
Got it.
I've been told by Hody that it's sort of a running gag that people may mispronounce your surname. Is that true?
Yes. I've gotten many. I've gotten Winograds. I've gotten Wingard. Then, of course, there's people who mispronounce it on purpose in all sorts of insulting ways. But, no, kudos. You got it right. One of the few people achievement unlocked.
You know? Oh, thank you. Well, I'm a little sensitive about it because I have a typically long Greek surname, and even though my name is John, should be simple enough. My last name is Georgopoulos, so every single one of my college professors would point to me and say, "George, do you have the answer?" So for a long time I've been George, but. So I'm sensitive. I'll try to pronounce everyone's surnames correctly. Anyway, I'm glad you could join us today, Jacob. I should say tonight, Jacob. And a few things I wanted to talk about is, let's get the elephant in the room out of the way and acknowledge it. The horrific incident yesterday involving Charlie Kirk. I talked enough yesterday about it, both on Liberty Lens with Mike Termott and also on William Dole Pilar's conservative show, Fired Up. The only thing that came to my mind, guys, when that news broke, and the only thing I could bring myself to tweet out on X yesterday, because my policy is I want to take 24 hours for things to calm down. Not that anyone's grief has abided in 24 hours, but in terms of not making any rash judgments, not making any rash statements, the only thing I could say was, senseless, utterly senseless. And that's still the way I feel about that act. Today we know, we have a little bit more information on what happened. Kirk, 31 years old, was shot right around, I would venture a guess to say, where some of us on the show might be residing, Utah Valley University. He was kicking off his American comeback tour, and he was shot. And my guess is killed almost instantly, conflicting reports, but he did pass away. Shooters still at large. They had two people, guys, that they held on to, questioned, and then said they were released. They were not suspects in the shooting. They were just people of interest. perhaps people who may have seen something or known something. More video has come out today of someone on a roof. There's been a couple of pictures released that this is someone that the authorities are looking for. Hody, let me kick it over to you to start the discussion. Tell me your thoughts on Charlie Kirk and the tragedy. There's no other way to describe it, the tragedy that occurred yesterday.
Thanks. I wrote down a thing, so I just appreciate if you give me just a few minutes here to get it all out. Because I tend to meander when I talk, and this is not something I want to meander when I talk about.
Right.
So Charlie Kirk has had a massive impact on the shape of America. During his time as an 18-year-old activist to a 31-year-old influencer, he has almost single-handedly swung the young adult vote from overwhelmingly left to scarcely left at all. Notably, while females in this demographic are slightly more progressive than before, his work with young men has made them overwhelmingly more conservative. Without Kirk altering these demographics, Trump does not win either of his elections. Kirk has impacted my faith work greatly. Though he rejected it early in his activism, Kirk eventually openly embraced Christian nationalism. In 2020, he called for Christians to seize control of government, media, education, business, arts and entertainment, church, and family in an effort he called the Seven Mountains Mandate. Despite a fraction of the budget of his competitors, Kirk opened his ministry in 2,650 high schools and 850 college campuses with a total of 250,000 student leaders and who knows how many adherents. By comparison, his largest faith-based competition, CRU, which is formerly the Campus Crusade for Christ, has only 20% of those members, and they fall short of Kirk's total campuses by over 1,000. His ministry online eclipses any sense of competition. His YouTube channel has over 4 million subscribers and 1.1 billion views. His podcasts average 500,000 downloads a day. John Lennon claimed to be bigger than Jesus, and among the religious youth today, this is factually true of Charlie Kirk. They are hearing more from Turning Point USA than from any other Jesus Christ outlet, and it is not even close. As a Christian with views like of love and liberty, I found myself constantly at odds with Charlie Kirk and his condemnation of the sin of empathy, his views on immigrants as having no rights on our side of the border, his thoughts about the fuzziness of date rape, white replacement theory and displacement theories, his belief that black people were better off enslaved and subjugated than free, as he voiced in the Jubilee video, his insistence that stoning homosexuals is, and I will quote him, God's perfect law when it comes to sexual matters, unquote. And there's just a lot more. He was very good at saying please and thank you. But polite debate while calling for an end to an ethnicity's collective rights is preposterous. Smiling at somebody as you call for them to be stoned to death is not actually as compassionate as his advocates claim it is. Out of respect to his victims, I can't downplay the immense harm he has caused. Unless you've been active in Christian spaces during the last decade plus, it's hard to comprehend how his actions and words have led to the deaths of children, family members who will never speak to each other again, racial and gender tensions, and the replacement of Christ's words with a political mandate. Right-wingers are correctly noting today, correctly, that dehumanizing rhetoric and misleading lies might inspire somebody to commit acts of violence against these targets. This goes for Kirk's dehumanizing rhetoric and misleading lies as well. There's a great deal of irony that with Kirk's last two statements, he failed two fact checks, demonizing both trans people and minorities for higher level of violence than they are actually responsible for. And while I condemn any false and ignorant things said about Kirk that put his life in danger, I recognize that Kirk is a perpetrator of the same false and ignorant utterances that he issued against others, which statistically also cost them their lives. In life, Kirk said that people calling him a fascist put him in danger, and he turned out to be prophetically correct. I wonder what happened to that energy for the immigrants he said should have been killed without any legal ramifications because they don't have any rights here. I'll bet they might have been subject to the same targeting as well. All this granted, I cannot condemn his assassination enough. Martin Luther King Jr. said, "The ultimate weakness of violence is that it is a descending spiral, begetting the very thing it seeks to destroy. Instead of diminishing evil, it multiplies it." Through violence, you may murder the liar, but you cannot murder the lie nor establish the truth. Through violence, you murder the hater, but you do not murder hate. Kirk's death will undoubtedly be treated as martyrdom. Trump has already vowed retaliation against whatever he considers leftist speech. The State Department has vowed to go after even more immigrants in his honor, legal or otherwise, in light of his death. The DNC evacuated for a bomb threat today. In a shouting match also today, a Republican has now accused every Democratic lawmaker of causing Kirk's death, multiplying the now legitimized targets of political violence. Seven historically black colleges and universities are under lockdown after receiving bomb threats. All this tells us a certain truth. This was not the way to defeat Charlie Kirk. He had just finished unquestionably losing an international debate at Oxford. His attended events went from full stadium seating to about 1,000 to 2,000 people per appearance. The GOP was almost certainly going to be a lame duck in about a year. There is good evidence that Kirk committed destruction of our culture, and that was about to finish running its course. Now, instead, that destruction will be immortalized. Violent revolutions, no matter how well-intended, have terrible results. Kirk was a child of God, no less than those whose lives he ruined. I have spent hours with Big John sticking up for the souls of the victims of Kirk's horrific beliefs, and now Kirk himself is a victim, and I will stick up for his soul as well. I am a former bigot. While I was more honest than Kirk even at my worst, publicly speaking, the only difference between us was that he was popular and I wasn't. In another life, that means that could have been me up there, leaving my gal alone, my two kids fatherless. I am grateful that the Holy Spirit, acting through those who cared for me, reached my heart. With his death, Kirk will never get the opportunity to change the way that I did. And to say that he would never change flies in the face of a God that can do anything, my own personal testimony, as well as evidence. The men who largely crafted the modern evangelical policy against homosexuals ended up examining their works, seeing how bad they were, and fully repented of their mistake. As much as Kirk's victims deserve a chance to live in peace, Kirk himself deserved a chance to change. And that chance was robbed from him. As Jesus said, you have heard it said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your Father in heaven. If you love those who love you, what reward will you get? Are not even the tax collectors doing that? The ghoulish willingness to mock people and their grieving families is an embarrassment to libertarians with real consequences. It cost us Defend the Guard and massive donations in New Hampshire when we elected to mock John McCain's grieving daughter. Similarly, any celebration or jokes directed at Charlie Kirk's death is going to blow up in our faces. We must become a movement that recognizes the victims of men like these while also having compassion on these souls who are lost forever and the loved ones they leave behind. Libertarians must be the most human, not the least human, in moments like this. We have all sinned. We have all flirted with statism. To have no compassion for those who perished on the wrong side of good and evil is to forfeit our humanity and replace it with intolerance. If we cannot love our enemies, the handful of libertarians left on earth will fall to our enemies in short order. Those of us Kirk despised the most should defeat his dark legacy with empathy and love, not by becoming the monsters he always said we were. This is a dividing line and we must heal. We should find it within ourselves to mourn both Kirk and the people he hurt. In my faith, I believe Kirk will dine at a table with his victims one day, and all of them will have love for each other and joy on their faces. That day, of course, will not be today, but with forgiveness and hope, I can genuinely wish Charlie Kirk a powerful, redemptive journey in the afterlife, and I hope that we in this life will also work to bridge the divide between our neighbors and ourselves, no matter how grave our differences may be. And that's what I got.
Well said, Hody, and thank you for that. I know you meant that, and heartfelt, and well-meaning, and well said. Jacob, your comments.
Yeah, I did a live stream of my own last night, which was over an hour, so people can go check that out if they want to get my full comments. I have a lot of conflicting thoughts here. On one hand, I can resonate with a lot of what Hody said, because I think many on the right and many on the left, you know, the ones who are right-wing and left-wing statists, they do sometimes, you know, various levels of consciously doing this, advocate for violence against innocent people and different groups, right? And this is why we're libertarians. I know Hody and I are anarchists. I don't know where you stand on that, Big John. But I – so, for, you know, for me, anyone who is ever advocating for, you know, any law or policy which is, you know, not based in just a strict enforcement of property rights and the non-aggression principle – you know, I was just having this conversation with my pastor yesterday, who is, you know, kind of like liberty curious, you would say, and trying to have that conversation to push him to be like, listen, I know on one hand you think there's like a difference between what, you know, someone going and killing someone in cold blood and, you know, versus a government policy that leads to death. And to be fair, there is kind of a difference, right? So on one hand, I think we have to challenge our friends, our family, our neighbors to consider that core libertarian critique that, you know, behind every law is a person with a gun there to ensure that you comply with the law, right? On the other hand, there is a distinction, I think, cognitively and practically between people supporting various statist policies and having certain beliefs which might, you know, as a second or third order consequence lead to violence, and then, like, you know, actual carrying out of violence, right? Like, I don't hold in the same level of evil someone who is advocating for a anti-immigration policy who wants to deport, you know, 10 million immigrants, 20 million immigrants, which, you know, is going to only be done through the force of the state and in the further expansion of police militarization and infringement of civil liberties and all of that, right? So I recognize that they're advocating for a policy that leads to violence and death. On the other hand, their advocacy for that and voting for politicians who will, you know, try to make those policies come to pass is quite different than if they were to, you know, strap on a weapon and gear themselves and start just, you know, finding every immigrant or immigrant looking person they could find and killing them in cold blood.
Sure.
Right. There is a difference there. And so when we're evaluating someone like Charlie Kirk on all of these different positions he had, which weren't, you know, libertarian positions, which were positions that we can criticize on libertarian grounds as Hody even did criticize on Christian grounds, I want to be able to recognize that, yes, the like many on the right and the left, the net effect of many of the positions that Charlie Kirk advocated for are things that while he was alive, I opposed and disagreed with. You know, I mean, he wasn't good on immigration. He wasn't good on the police or the police state. He wasn't good on the war on drugs. To my knowledge, he was a mixed bag on foreign policy, and I will give him credit for at least, you know, in the months leading, you know, before yesterday, I saw him at least starting to be willing to entertain questions to, like, the sort of, like, neocon war hawk status right. quo. And so I want to give him some credit for that, being willing to talk to libertarians, even though he didn't agree with them. I will say, you know, there's part of me that, even though I disagreed with a lot of his policies and his rhetoric, there was something about his seeming genuineness of wanting to engage with people who disagreed with him. And I at least thought he was genuine when he did try to often bring things back to his faith. And he's someone who I thought was at the very least, if we could say a lot of bad things about his policies, but as a Christian, I felt like Charlie embodied that line from Romans 12, that I am not ashamed of the gospel. And Charlie was very much not ashamed of his faith. And I want to give him credit for that, for, you know, sometimes very, you know, just always being willing to tie his faith and Jesus into whatever he was talking about. And I think that is, commendable on his part. And there's something that Charlie said many times, and did he live this out perfectly? That's debatable, right? But something that he said, which I think is kind of at the core of both my libertarian convictions and Christian convictions, which is that society, you know, and just human life kind of boils down to two different tracks that we can take. We either have conversations and persuasion for the means of resolving conflict, or we have violence. And really, like, there is no middle ground there, right? Right. That's kind of the only option. We either, as a society, you know, recognize that conflict is going to arise, and that, you know, maybe we talk about minimal force to stop murderers and you know, rapists and et cetera. But other than that, if there's conflicts over property, conflicts over, you know, anything where people's lives aren't in immediate danger, that we want to solve these conflicts with conversation and persuasion, and not with men's, you know, guns and drones and tanks and et cetera, right? And so Charlie was right that, like, for all of his flaws, that he wanted to persuade people. He went all over the country to different college campuses and different events because he was convicted of his beliefs, and he wanted to engage with people and convince them that his beliefs were the right beliefs. I don't think a lot of his beliefs were the right beliefs, but I know he kind of softly toyed around with things like Christian nationalism and whatnot. But in terms of, like, if we're talking about the Christian nationalism or Christian populist iceberg, I feel like Charlie Kirk is, you know, the tip, and there's a lot of more scary, dubious, you know, scary people much further down the pipeline than people like Charlie Kirk. People who aren't saying that we want to try to change things through persuasion and speech rather than violence. There are many Christian nationalists, and Hody would back me up on this, who are quite willing to just say, actually, no, we're done with the speaking and the persuasion. We're not going to speak with these people. They hate us. We hate them. We're going to push them out of our societies, push them out of our nations, or make it unlivable for them here in the here and now. So I think that... So that's what I think regarding Charlie Kirk. I think it's a mixed bag, but that there are things about him as a person and sort of like the underlying motivations there, which I do find commendable, and I think it's tragic that – listen, I guess we don't really know the exact motivation still. I'm kind of trying to also kind of like wait and see, but it doesn't – I mean – right now, I think the possibilities look like it was either some kind of op, or that it was some, you know, frustrated person who might have had a, you know, left wing bend, might have been part of a, you know, the LGBT community, and or at least an advocate for them, and felt like, you know, Charlie Kirk was a, you know, the embodiment of like an oppressor or someone that they hated and someone that they thought deserved to die. And I don't know. Something I'm wrestling with is that while I see, as I said already, that both the left and the right advocate for policies that lead to death, and they both have their own different, you know, baggages with statism. When I'm around right-wing groups, I'll get a lot of pushback for the things I say, but I don't know. I don't fear the same kind of like political violence from the right that I've seen from the left, except from the Christian nationalist group. And there's this weird, you know, like people like James Lindsay and others have talked about this sort of like rise of the woke right. And I kind of find myself at a weird crossroads because I came from the left, and I kind of left the left because of all the wokeism, because of the sort of like rejection of dealing with people as individuals and kind of dealing with more in grievance-based politics and sort of denying objective truth and whatnot, and basically saying that all it comes down to is group identity and it's these power struggles. And but there is this rise in the woke right, many who, you know, that there's a lot of crossover with the Christian nationalist types. who seem like, you know, they have different beliefs, different ideology, but the same tactics, right? They're like saying, you know what? It is just power. It is just our group versus this group. So I'm not trying to whitewash that threat at all. You know, maybe there'll be a rise in violence from that group in the near future, which I hope doesn't come to pass. But I am, I guess, a little bit concerned right now about at least a faction of the left that, or, you know, not even just the people, but that there's something on both left and right that is just in our culture right now, in our nation, that's toxic and it's poison, and that is pushing people to reject that underlying ethos that Charlie was right about, that we have a choice between persuasion or violence. And there's many people who on the left and then some on the right who are saying, yeah, the time for persuasion is done. And that's scary.
Well, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I did want to jump in and say when I was assessing this, and I want to wrap this up so we can move on to our other topics, but the thing I will say is, again, in the strongest way I could say it, this was utterly senseless. It achieves nothing. It's the taking of a life. It's not going to achieve your political goals. If this was a leftist who thought that by shooting Charlie Kirk, he was going to shut up this movement, the complete opposite has happened. So the violence itself is deplorable as a strategy. It's ridiculous. But I will push back a little bit, Jacob, in that I don't see this as a left-wing exclusive thing. I think it really is where your memory and where your attention is, right? So depending on the circles you get, whether it's on your echo chamber or wherever, YouTube or whatever, whatever's algorithmically driven, you're going to see the thing that outrages you the most. And if you happen to be someone who is anti-left, you're going to see the stuff that from the left that outrages you. If you're on the left, you're going to see the right-wing stuff in hatred. I mean, today, it's been nothing but let's pass a law to expel any member of Congress that does not sufficiently praise Charlie Kirk. Let's pass a law. Now, the thing is, the violence, I think, to your point, and to something that I was talking about with Mike Termont yesterday is, yes, there are right now these acts of violence that seem to be coming primarily from the left. But one could argue that the violence from the right has now been institutionalized, whether it's ICE going around as some secret Gestapo, just hauling people into vans and making them disappear or imprisoning them without any sort of trial, without any due process. And as we're going to talk about later, other activities the government has taken that target very specifically groups of people that they feel do not represent their niche, their demographic, their followers. So to me, it's less an issue of white nationalism, Christian nationalism, whatever. It's the nationalism part that's going to drive you to this end if you're on the right. And I was having this sort of conversation yesterday with my partner here at Grumblings Media, who's a conservative. He's a big MAGA guy. And he made the same statement you did. And I said, well, you have very selective memory. And when I gave him examples, he goes, but it's different because what you just cited as right-wing hatred is actually facts. So when it's facts, it's not hatred. What the left states is false, and it's hatred. And that just encapsulated it for me and hopefully for the viewers, because it was like, it's only hatred if you don't agree with it. If you agree with it, it's speaking God's truth or speaking the national truth or whatever. So that's where I would push back. I firmly believe what you're saying, that the tribalism, the my side versus their side, it's not enough that someone is wrong. I can't think that Charlie Kirk was wrong, apparently. I have to think he was evil. And if you're someone who agreed with Charlie Kirk, I'm not wrong. Big John is evil. He is actively contributing to the death of America from the Charlie Kirk supporter point of view. And I think that's where the major fault line should be recognized as being drawn, in my
opinion. Yeah. No, I mean, I don't really disagree other than I just wonder how much cause and effect there is. And it's not to eliminate agency from the people on the right. And I've actually been, you know, after this event, I knew what was coming. Like I knew last night that I'd wake up this morning and see a lot of people on the right, Christian nationalists, and even some who call themselves libertarians saying, see, you can't reason with the left. They will just kill you.
Right.
This is why we have to stop trying to use speech and persuasion, and we have to now resort to the other option. Right. And first of all, I find that to be incredibly, like, I don't know, like, I find that repulsive to be using someone, like the death of a father and a husband who, for all his faults, had this beautiful commitment to saying, like, no, I want to use persuasion and speech, and you're going to use his death as a sort of, like, tool for, like, political recruitment to your calls to, you know, go in the opposite direction. I find that just incredibly offensive and disturbing. So it's not that I'm trying to give cover to the right to say that they don't have, like, listen, the right, you know, has a lot of issues that it has to figure out, right? They got to get their house in order for sure. And I say that as someone who considers himself more of a, you know, on the right, if I had to pick a side there. But I do think that as much as I hold the people on the right responsible to say they have agency, you know, maybe my bias is that I just, you know, I came from the left and I guess, like, my personal story is, like, watching this sort of woke mind virus evolve from the left. And I remember people like Jordan Peterson, someone else who, again, a mixed bag, but Jordan Peterson was saying this for years,
sure,
right? He was saying this woke insanity on the left, this identity politics, is toxic, it's poison, and what's going to happen is it's going to sow so much resentment on the other side that it's going to create a reaction just based on human psychology that, like, you are going to get a bunch of right-wingers who are basically going to say, like, you know what, fine, like, you know, like, if we're going to play the game of identity politics, we're going to play the game of identity politics, we're going to play it to win. So that's my concern, and I don't know what the solution is. And I'm very careful about, like, not wanting to make too much of a hasty generalization about left and right, because there are many factions on the right, many factions on the left. But I do know there's plenty of people on the left who see the same problem I do, like the Cenk Uygur and Anna Kasparian from the Young Turks. They're, you know, lefties who, like, I used to follow and I still follow, who are kind of like, yeah, there is this problem we have on the left that, like, you know, we have to get our house in order. That's they probably feel about that camp of the left how I feel about Christian nationalists.
Sure,
and in a similar way.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I think most of us can agree with that. Let's catch up to the comments. Acknowledge the folks out there. Hey, all, Magner. Hey, Magner. Free joining us. What's up, guys? We're talking some heavy stuff tonight. Free, that's what's up. FYI, everyone, I will be on Free's Are You Smarter Than a Politician tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Eastern. Come throw some points my way. I would greatly appreciate it. Terry says, hi, guys. Hi, Terry. Magner, the utilitarian harm towards advocacy for mass violence far outweighs any harm they do as an individual violent actor. Okay, Magner, thank you. Free. The calls for censorship seems to be against what Kirk was about. People are losing their jobs, etc. Yeah, it does seem ironically to be the case. Free, you're absolutely right. And then a question for Jacob. Is this Jacob? Yeah. Why would you personally fear political violence from the right, Jacob? You're literally their target demo, not even saying that is a pejorative.
Oh, I'm not saying I fear it like they're going to come after me. I fear it because I don't want to see innocent people hurt. And I'm especially, like, you know, Hody will appreciate this, something we've talked about a lot. Like, Jesus had his harshest words for his people.
Right.
And I often am like, you know, sometimes people on the right, when they encounter me, will make the wrong assumption. Like, I'm some, you know, like, I think, Cody, you remember that one New Hampshire guy was like, you know, Jacob Winograd is this left libertarian, open borders, maximalist race denier who runs the Libertarian Christian Institute, which I was like, amazing, like quoting Luke Skywalker from the sequel trilogy. Like, everything you just said was wrong. Like, right. not a single correct descriptor in that sentence. But they assume that because I have harsh words for the right. It is not because I don't like it, because the right, and especially the Christian right, it's like, you know, you're my people and you're screwing it up. So I'm going to call it out.
Yeah, that seems to be something I'm glad you said it, because I kind of share that belief. Before I can start criticizing anyone else, I have to criticize my own, right? And make sure that I'm set up properly before you continue. And Magner, thanks for the question for Jacob. All right, let's move on to the next topic. Make sure we cover everything. Guys, part of the problem actually in the wake of Charlie Kirk's death, rather, is the type of language that's coming out of our elected officials, the president, who are using disturbing language. Now, again, I'm not one of those guys that thinks, to your point, individuals lose their agency because somebody charismatic happens to throw a few words at them. But it is interesting to note the president has used the word war when referring to the left. We're at war. We have to eliminate this problem. Our side has to win. We're fighting for the soul of America. And you hear this, and then the right wing troll bots, the talking heads on X now that have replaced the mainstream media as parrots, all the same, you know, the same stuff coming out from I'm assuming Stephen Miller or whoever is running the propaganda arm of the Trump administration right now. But this is not anything new, fellas. This has been going on. I've been calling this out for a while. The Trump administration, before he got elected during the campaign, was very heavy with the militaristic and the warlike symbolism, rhetoric, and references when it came to policy, right? Illegal immigrants are an invading force. That was the phrase they used. They weren't just illegal aliens. They weren't here illegally. They were an invading force. Drug cartels are terrorist organizations attacking the U.S., right? These are examples of this is the type of hatred we were talking about that some people may have selective memory about. So one of the things in line with all this was in the lead up of a past couple of weeks was this clamoring to rename the Department of Defense or co-name the Department of Defense the Department of War. Now, it sounds almost silly, right? The Department of Defense used to be called the Department of War up until 1947. And it seems kind of silly, like, you know, is it one of those Gulf of America situations where we want to make some, you know, hollow patriotic statement and we want to say Gulf of America instead of Gulf of Mexico, and Trump is going to find anybody that says Gulf of America or whatever? But Hody, talk to me as a quick jab. Like if this was a championship fight, this is like the opening couple of jabs, right? Just to pepper your opponent a little bit. Why is it a big deal that Big John is worried about this Department of War change?
During the announcement, they explicitly said the problem with Department of Defense is that it focuses only on our defensive capabilities. Yeah, that's the point, right? Like, that's the fear, right? We only wanted you focusing on the defensive capabilities. That's why it was more appropriate to call it that. Now, has it been acting as the Department of War forever? Yes. And so I think a lot of us saw this coming. Trump's third most common reiterated promise was to end the wars. His fifth most reiterated promise was to start new wars. And so this was something that we're kind of like, is he not? And when we saw him stack the cabinet the way it did, especially with Hegseth, we were like, oh, okay, this is a war president. This is a wartime president. And so it was, I think with him openly embracing it, there's a reason to be worried that this is a next step. Donald Trump dipped his toe into D.C. before invading other states, right? Like he did something he was allowed to do before doing something else. And in this case, he's actually showing his hand. He's saying, yeah, we want to show off our offensive capabilities. We know we're going to be engaging in things that aren't defensive. Last quick hitter for you. The OBBBA, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, gave the military authorization to commit strikes without even requiring approval anymore. Gave ICE and the IRS, oddly, that same power as well. Do not need permission from any judges, permission from any higher-ups. They can just conduct these strikes at a whim. And so this is just more people that can authorize war. and more, and as long as they authorize it at the lowest level, you know, when you've got five people and any one of them can shut it down, you're going to be better off. You're going to have fewer military conflicts. When it only takes one person to say, yes, let's do it, and then that's the end of it, they're starting a war, this is where we're at now. So we have both the legislation, and now we've got the title to match. We've got the desire. We've got the right people who have wanted to be declaring these wars in charge. It is not looking good, and these are not things that you want to give to any president. I always tell the Republicans, is this what you want to is this the power you want the Democrats to have? Just remember that. You may approve of the war against Venezuela and Greenland and Iran and whatever. Are you going to approve of whoever takes over after Trump? Are you going to approve of their wars as well? Because all these powers are going to carry right over.
You're absolutely right. And Jacob, did you see this run-up? I mean, I've always said the militaristic language, going back to the campaign, was always to foster a sense of constant emergency, of constant, like, the president needs to be unaccountable to anybody because we're in a war situation, whether that involves tariffs, whether that involves signing the greatest number of executive orders, and then cheering about it. Like, to me, if you're a constitutionalist, when the White House is self-promoting, putting out memes, 200th XO signed today, most in history by any president. Wait a second. I thought that was a bad thing. When Obama put out a few, we all justifiably flipped our lids, right? But now we're cheering the fact that you know, and I had a lot of fun pulling out Mike Lee and Ted Cruz and all these guys who were crapping on executive orders all throughout their Senate careers. And now they're happy as, you know, clams that Trump has hit that 200 milestone in less than a year. So, do you think this was always the plan? Is this a Project 2025 sort of thing where this was always the plan to live in a constant state of emergency?
I don't know how to answer that. I think it's, you know, this is sort of almost, you'd have to answer a sort of more meta level question, which is like, you know, is the government, you know, inefficient or evil, right? And or both. And but sometimes it's hard to say both, because it's like you get to a point sometimes as a libertarian and ANCAP where you're wondering, like, how much was this pre-planned? And then you're like, okay, are they actually that capable that, like, they could have, like, coordinated that much of a propaganda campaign, or did it just kind of, like, organically happen? I don't know. I don't know even how much this is Trump's ideas versus, you know, Trump is just sort of the avatar by which many in his cabinet and orbit are, you know, yeah. I mean, yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot there in terms of speculation, in terms of, like, what was the strategy and all the, you know, I think, you know, I'm someone who at this point regrettably voted for Trump because I knew he was going to be bad on a lot of things, but I thought that it would be like status quo bad, not escalating, you know, like every week is like a year's worth of bad.
You thought it would be within the normal parameters of
right.
Bad,
well,
right?
I was pretty confident he was going to free Ross, and I thought maybe there'd be a couple other little wins we'd get. And I was like, okay, I was like, you know, this is worth a gamble, I thought, and I'm glad he freed Ross. And ever since then, it's been just a never-ending nightmare.
Right.
I think that, listen, like, you know, something I've been thinking about with all this, right? Because, like, you can trace what's going on with, you know, all the operations in the South Caribbean and the drama with Venezuela. I mean, there was stuff that happened in Trump's first term where they were trying to basically get regime change down there, which failed. You know, they tried to back a certain group, but then they weren't able to. And then, like, Trump left office, and I think that attempt effectively failed around, like, 2021. And then I think now that they're back in, they were almost, like, trying to pick up where they left off, but now trying to also tie in justifications that were more about immigration concerns and the, you know, like the worry about all the narco terrorists and all that. And this has made me put on, even though I'm an ANCAP, I've been kind of like lately when I'm talking to people, putting on my constitutional hat to have conversations about this, because it gets to this like conversation about, and I've done a lot of writing and podcasts over the last several months on just war theory, and comes down to like, well, how do you determine what a credible threat is, right? And how do you know when you are justified as a government or anyone in saying like, you know, now's the time to use the military or use some kind of you know, force mechanism or group to stop a threat? And can you even do something preemptive, right? And I said, listen, I think that if you're like, everyone admits that war is hell, right? And like, I think that in like the idealistic sense, obviously, that, you know, I'm anti-war because in every war, innocent people die. And sure, I'm not okay with that. Now, you could make the argument that sometimes, you know, defensive wars are just wars. You have to kind of say, you know what, like, casualties will happen, like innocent casualties will happen that are like unintended, and there's like, you know, you don't want to like not be able to defend yourself because of that sort of like inevitability. It's like, okay, fine, I can kind of meet you halfway there, but then what you have to do then, because you know accidents are going to happen and innocent people are going to die, you have to then part of just war theory is you have to say like we have exhausted all other options of resolving this conflict, right? Going back to that persuasion and conversation over sure, violence, right? And so then I had someone ask me, well, like, how do you know that, right? And I was like, well, you know, as an ANCAP, I have an answer for that, but I'm trying to meet, you know, reach people where they're at. It's like, listen, there's a reason our founding fathers had all these checks and balances, right? And why only Congress could declare war. Because even though the president's the head of the military, you know, the so to speak, and he, you know, you could theorize that maybe if, like, they had intel that were like, oh, we have to act immediately to protect the nation or whatever, and you want them to kind of have that ability. But the way that the system was supposed to work was that either before action or immediately after action, you go to Congress, which is sort of a proxy, at least in the constitutional sense, for, like, some kind of legal check on the ability to wage war, and like the executive branch in the military has to go to Congress as a sort of proxy for the people to say, here is the evidence, here is the case, here is why we have to act or had to act, and like there was no other option,
right?
And to meet a burden of proof which would then at least, you know, plausibly justify war. But when you present that to people, they go, well, that's really hard. It would almost be like you could never hardly ever go to war unless it was like purely defensive. And it's like, bingo, right? It's like,
right,
that's the point. That's the whole freaking point. The whole point was to have a check in there to keep America from becoming an empire.
Right.
And so, you know, it's like, for all the flaws the Constitution had, and we can, you know, we can spooner that all day long, this was one of the things that's in there that I actually appreciate. But of course, we've had decades since the end of World War II of many, you know, just different ways of that being eroded. And what's going on now is just one more further erosion now, where you can basically call anything you want terrorism. And therefore, it's no longer, because like, really, if you were going to like buy the hype here, like drink the Kool-Aid and say that, like, oh, we're trying to stop the smuggling of illegal drugs into the country and stop human trafficking, right? Like, well, the branch of government that of the military that should be doing that is the Coast Guard, not right, the Navy. And, you know, and then the Coast Guard would do it with the authority to, like, bring charges and make arrests, and then there would be due process. But then when you just label them terrorists, what you're basically saying is we're going to throw out due process and basically give the government, give the military, give the president, give the executive branch unilateral power to basically say that's a terrorist and we can just go blow them up. We can just
right,
go
right,
kill them. We can just go throw them in a cage, God knows where, and there's nothing you can do about it.
You're absolutely right. And let me just bring up a comment real quick to what you said. Chris Thompson says, no, Pete Hegseth, or as I call him, Secretary McDricky Drunk, no, Pete Hegseth loves war, war fighters, and killing for the state. Yeah, and what's, the thing I was going to say, Jacob, while you were talking there was, they're not even hiding it now. they are literally saying, we want regime change in Venezuela. We want regime change. This is not even like a, wow, does Bush want regime change? Do you think that's what he's after? Is he really after the oil? Like, I mean,
it's mission creep, because they start with the whole counter narcotics, and they start with the, I think back in February, the whole thing started with Trump going, they're not taking the immigrants back fast enough or something like that. It's mission creep, with Afghanistan, just like with Iraq, just like with every other intervention of the last 30, 40, 50 years. And maybe this is a bold take, but like, I wish Harris would have won now, kind of, because then at least the right would still be pretending to be anti-war.
Right, at least the pretense of anti-war and the pretense and the pretense of economically conservative too. All right, before we continue, let me take a quick sidebar here to say, hey everyone, help us out, make some money. We're not funded by Putin here. We don't make any money off the propaganda that Stephen Miller sends out to his trolls. We gotta work for a living. So do us a favor. Buy the Free for All t-shirt over there. Live free. It's a simple libertarian statement. We don't make too much money on each show. We just want to spread the word, all joking aside. You could scan the QR code there. Go right to the site, or just go address there at the bottom. shop.grumblingsmedia.com. shop.grumblingsmedia.com. And get your favorite shirt, or you could just get one with our nice logo on it, or a big mug, sort of like what Hody drinks out of. We got an even bigger one now, Hody. He's got the little one. Hody's a little man, so he uses a little mug, I think. But we also got the bigger ones. Give those a shot. Really appreciate you taking a look. Okay. To sort of tie this in, guys, on September 1st, the U.S. Navy, military, Air Force, some combination of death dealers went out there in international waters and allegedly, they claim, sunk a boat with 11 people on it that they claim were trying to smuggle fentanyl into the United States. Now, I don't know about you guys, but to me, this is just murder, right? We're supposed to believe. And I'm always amazed by the so-called conservatives, the so-called libertarians who are like, they did the right thing. You know, wait a second. You're saying that you're saying it's a good idea for the government to be judge, jury, and executioner in this particular case, either Trump or Hegseth or whoever actually pulled the trigger on that. You're okay with that? Because guess what? President AOC is going to have that same power, that the precedent that you're setting. So keep that in mind when you start crowing about this nonsense. But that was on September 1st. September 5th is when they decided to do the big hoopla about changing the name from Department of Defense to Department of War. Shortly after that, the timeline is they would say, oh, we're thinking about regime change in Venezuela. And of course, we've moved all our ships into that part of the world. They're clearly taking aim at Maduro. So, Hody, let me start off with you. Where's this gonna end? Do you think we'll see American boots on the ground in Venezuela?
We have seen this exact same thing when we declared the war on terror. Instead of now arresting you and saying you're a terrorist and having to prove that, you know, and hey, we were still committing a lot of crimes against prisoners then too, right? Like, right. We're in a bad place anyway. So this is just an escalation of it. But now, instead of arresting them and supposedly giving them a trial, presenting evidence, we can kill them. And that was done on day one of Trump's presidency. It was actually done the day before he freed Ross Ulbricht. He declared a literal war on doing anything that Ross Ulbricht did. And here's the problem. Is it's a literal war. I need people to understand what that means. You see it with the war on terror. You no longer have to prove it. You know, we've been blowing up weddings and under the guise because we have given ourselves a mandate to commit a war on terror. Now that we have the war on drugs, which is now an actual, you know, before it was like the war on drugs, I run a DARE program out of your elementary school. Right. Now it's the war on drugs, a literal war on drugs that Trump is committing. He is already now using those powers. We no longer have to, you know, it's a trust me, bro university, right? Like, and trust me, there weren't any kids on the boat. you know, even though this is the same administration that leveled the whole freaking hotel, right, with the Signal chat leak, just trying to get somebody, right? And they're just saying, oh yeah, trust us, it was going to be narcotics. It was, these guys were all bad. You got to prove it, right? Like, you got to prove it. And listen, as libertarians, let the fentanyl through, right? But at this point, I've given up even pretending for anything libertarian happening from this administration. And I'm just saying, can we at least, I'm going to put on Jacob's same constitutional conservative hat. Can we at least say, hey, listen, can you please prove this in a court of law before just murdering people? Right. I do think that this is going to escalate to the point of war on terror, because why would they give up the power when they have it? Why would anyone do it? Every president we had since the war on terror was declared, used and abused those powers for the war on terror. And why would that change with the war on drugs now? It won't.
Right. Jacob.
Well, I mean, just to add to this all, there was just, I think, yesterday, I think it was The Intercept had an article where they're basically collaborating with a Pentagon official, basically saying that, like, yeah, this was just the murder of civilians, straight up. Like, they didn't have any, you know, I mean, which isn't surprising to us libertarians, right? We're like, oh no, the government lied about something? But, I mean, but right. Like, to normies, you know, it's just kind of like, you know, it's so frustrating. It's hard to stay positive and not get a little gray-pilled or black-pilled, because, again, like, with the right-wingers especially, it's just kind of like, when will you learn? Like, I guess for, like, the people in the government, I don't have much hope. But for the pundits and for, like, the voters, right, who just anytime a Republican gets in, they completely lose whatever sort of, like, spine they had to stand up to the government and to the president and to the to DC to be like, well, hold on, like, you know, should we be spending all this money on war and all that and whatnot? As soon as a right wing president is in there, it's just all bets are off. It's just, you know, we're America. We're just the best. Everything we do is great and amazing. I mean, I don't even know what I don't even know, like, what Kool-Aid they're trying to drink. Like, I don't even know what the propaganda is these days. Maybe there isn't, like you said, maybe it's just like they're saying the quiet part out loud and people are literally just that happy to go along and just be like, oh yeah, we should just do regime change in Venezuela, and we should just be, you know, killing immigrants and just be killing civilians and just, like, you know, whatever, right? Like, I don't know. It feels like we're living in, like, bizarro world to me.
It is. You know, it's funny, and I do think you hit on it. I do think that Trump, see, to me, the if I could divorce myself from the reality of what's happening, right, because let's pretend I could be some celestial or something from the Marvel universe and I could step beyond this sort of reality, right? What's interesting to me is, can these right-wing MAGA people maintain this nonsense after Trump goes? Because Trump is the only politician in my lifetime, guys, and I think I've been around a little bit longer than you guys. I've got a lot more gray on my head than you guys. You guys are still young pups in this, right? But I've never seen a politician who openly has had the success that Trump has had, while at the same time doing, like, if you had given him a checklist of, here's 100 things that would disqualify you from being in office, he takes pride in announcing them, doing them, and checking them off and telling everybody, like, oh, by the way, I think we should do regime change. Here it is. Oh, by the way, I don't need Congress. I want to rule as a dictator. Sure,
It's political idolatry. And yeah. it's mixed with a bastardized, heretical, offensive version of Christianity, right? Like, Trump's like, you know, like, I want people to pray for me so I can go to heaven, and having the Department of Faith, and the White House is always releasing these virtue signals that are hollow and meaningless, and showing clips of all the people praying in the White House while they decide who to bomb next. I mean, it's gross. It's disgusting. I see people literally on my timeline saying, like, you know what? Like, I was all like, release the Epstein files, but if Trump and Kash Patel and Pam Bond, Bondi say that, like, there's nothing to see there, then I just trust them. If they say that we have to go to war here, then I just trust them. Like, they're like, they literally just say, unironically, when our guy does it, it's okay. I literally lose words for how to even, like, have, it's like, we're not living in the same reality. Is what it feels like. It's like, I don't even know how to have a conversation with people. They're just so lost. I mean, I think it just, again, it says something about the moment we're in. This is why identity politics, this is why the culture war is such a trap, because I think it is sort of used to cement this tribal loyalty, which then, you know, now to give credit to Trump, this isn't good credit, it's bad credit. Not every politician is always able to maximize the effectiveness of that tribal loyalty. Trump is this, like, unique actor who just, like, perfectly and horrifyingly, like, brings out the worst of the worst,
right?
You know, like, instincts and impulses of people to just, like, buy, you know, bait, hook, and sinker, just everything that he's spewing out. Not all. Like, there are, I want to give credit, there are some in the American First kind of like MAGA right-wing space who are very unhappy, and I've seen that, and I've tried to encourage them to be like, listen, like, you know, I think Cody and I talked about this last time I had him on my show, where I was like feeling lots of regret for voting for Trump and wondering what good can come from it. I'm trying to basically reach these people to be like, you know what? I thought like you, maybe not the same way, but close enough, that maybe like Trump could do some good this time, but you see it's not going anywhere, and this should be the final like nail in the coffin to believing that the Republican Party is ever going to meaningfully stand for liberty or for you know, true Christian values. Like, it's just that I mean, I'm sure people will say that ship had already sailed, and maybe, you know, it probably had. But for those who were still holding on, like some glimmer of hope, it's gone.
Yeah, and you know, Hody, I was thinking while Jacob was talking, in college, and since then, I had a very good friend, football player, one of these guys, 6'6", played middle linebacker for the Patriots for a couple of games later in his career. You know, yoked guy. And when he told me he was going into like tech sales and he would, you know, install your tech system and everything, I said, why? All you're good for is hitting people at high speeds, you know, jokingly, you know, tight friends, right? But he was successful every engagement he ever had. And when I asked him what's going on, he goes, you know what the problem is, John? He goes, you're too smart for your own good. You go into one of these things and you think of all the ways you could fail. He goes, I go in there, there's only one thought in my mind. I'm making the sale, and then I'm getting laid afterwards. And you know what? It sounds crazy. That's it. I don't want to say he was too stupid to fail, but he had zero sense of I might fail. Like, it never entered his head. And it wasn't a confidence thing. It was just like, yeah, I don't want to consider the negative side of anything. And I kind of think that's how Trump operates. Like, when people go to him and say, like, you can't talk about women grabbing women by the pussy or anything like that, why not? They'll laugh. It's funny. He has, like, zero regard for what might happen. You can't say out loud that you want to do a regime change. Why not? Somebody will like it somewhere out there. We'll tell, you know, let's all pretend like it was funny, you know. And it's that sort of thing. And I think that's what allows him to connect with so many people who themselves – want to say the quiet part out loud, whether it's an anti-immigrant fervor, whether it's, hey, we're better than those guys in the Middle East. We're better than the South Americans. America number one, baby. And whatever it takes to prove that, let's do it. Because here's the Big John test for anybody on X. If they use the word patriot in their posts, they're too far gone at this point. That's my rule of thumb. And if now that I've told you guys, I challenge you to unsee it. Look through your feed and pick out anybody that uses the word patriot in some positive way these days, and it's always tied into some nationalist extremist Yahoo or something like that.
Well, I've tried to rescue the term. I did an episode a month ago on my show the title, Is America the Bad Guy? And I tried to at the end say that, like, questioning our government is the most patriotic thing you could do.
You're right.
It really is. Like, I mean, this country was founded on, like, questioning the legitimacy of government, right?
It was founded on dissent.
There's nothing, like, you can love your nation but be skeptical and critical of your government. Just like, I don't, like, I'm critical of Israel's government. Doesn't mean I hate the nation of Israel or I hate Jews. I understand that governments are monopolies that are prone to corruption and doing evil. And I also think something that's irritated me for the longest time, and I don't know where it started, but there's been this effective propaganda campaign on the right, and it's perpetuated by people like Andrew Wilson and Michael Knowles, that, like, you know, the real reason why the right has not been successful in the last, like, 20, 30 years? It's because libertarians duped them. It's because the right embraced libertarianism and they got their, you know, butts kicked and it didn't work.
Right.
I mean, and for those listening, if you think I'm a crazy person and you're like, what the heck are you talking about, Jacob? Yeah, that's the correct response. But these people, I'm not kidding, say that word for word. Michael Knowles said this on the Tim Pool show. Andrew Wilson said this to me in my debate with him, that, like, libertarians duped the conservative movement back in, like, the 80s or 90s or something.
I wish we were that good. I wish we were that good. Yeah, so it's crazy.
I made a post today because someone repeated the same thing to me, and I was like, yep, you're right. You know, wasn't it great how, like, throughout the entire 2000s, the Republican Party embraced Ron Paul, embraced Terry Brown, embraced non-interventionism, and I don't know what went wrong that we still ended up in all these wars and catastrophes and still did endless spending and protectionism and all this stuff. I mean, it's just, again, it's like, yeah, maybe there's something to that. Like, if it doesn't matter what you say, it just matters how you say it.
And yeah,
if you say convincingly enough, people will just agree with you.
Say it at a third grade level. Say it often enough, and say it with 100% confidence. That's the Trump playbook, Cody.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll go back to the point that you made about this, Big John, that, like, he used the term regime change. You're not supposed to say that, right? Like, that's the thing that you get accused of doing that you don't actually
that
do.
That you deny.
Right.
That's, like, the thing you should deny.
Right. I was looking at, and there's certain things that Trump does that are very intentional. Those who, like, know, I don't like when people dismiss Trump as, like, stupid and buffoonish, because there's so much intention to what he does.
And you don't like me much.
Oh, well, I mean, he wants it to come off as buffoonish, right? But this is definitely varnished. Like, he takes talking points from, like, Mussolini. I miss the days when he ripped off Michelle Obama. It was much preferable than when he was like,
he used to rip off Ron Paul.
Yeah, and that, like, those are right. That's a good time when, at least, like, when he was stealing good people's work, right?
Yeah, Ron Paul, like, Mussolini. Yeah, you're absolutely right. It seems like whatever he thinks sounds cool in a meme, he doesn't care where it comes from or who says it.
But think of I mean, to my joke, like, now he's taking, like, Mein Kampf and stuff. But you look at, like, Umberto Eco's, like, 14 things that it takes for you to be a fascist state. He's intentionally using those words to describe what he's doing.
Sure.
Because he wants people to be like, cool, now you've officially checked off all 14 boxes to become a fascist state. And you want me to say that because you want to be like, whoa, you call me fascist? That's not something I'm doing. Right? Like, it's just like, he knows what he's doing here. I'm not going to call it 40 chess, but it's chess, right? Like, it's your usual politics. You know, like, and this is something we see whether it's Trump or anybody else. Like,
I still think it's not him. I just think he's the perfect vehicle for that type of messaging. I don't think it's him. You know, I've known people that've dealt with him, and they go,
I don't think he's the think tank behind the operation, but he's definitely the salesman.
Oh, absolutely,
an effective salesman for the sort of, like, you know, unholy collaboration of neocons and lizard people that are in his...
I can compromise to that, like Steve Bannon's telling him, like, this will be LOL funny if you get all the fascism points in one single
scene. Dude, it's kind of like there was this episode of Friends where Joseph has to, like, you know, come up with, like, a stage name, and so Chandler's just, like, giving him random last names, and he's like, you know, Joe, like, Stalin, and then Joey from Friends is like, oh, that sounds cool, and then Chandler's like, yeah, you should really make it Joseph, right? And then go and be like, I'm Joseph Stalin, right? Like, yeah, that sounds really cool. And then he goes and does the audition and comes out like, did you know there was a Joseph Stalin and he killed millions of people? And Chandler's like, what, really? Like, so, like, listen, like, you know, like, maybe that's half of what Trump's doing. Like, he's taking the talking points he's being given and delivering them with sincerity. But, like, who knows what percentage of the stuff he's repeating that he actually even, like, consciously is aware is, like, you know, channeling or repeating talking points from actual fascists.
Well, I think he's just reading whatever they give him, because at times when he's sort of like awake at 4 a.m. tweeting, which is the only way we know what he's actually thinking, right? Is like when he like still takes credit for Operation Warp Speed. When, you know, so here it is, every other MAGA person is complaining about vaccines and everything. He's got RFK in there, and he'll still say, RFK is right, vaccines are horrible, blah, 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 all the pseudoscientific nonsense they spout. And then he'll say, but I was the one who got that vaccine out, you know? And you're like, wait a second, these two should not be uttered in the same sentence. Pick one or the other, right? So that's how you know it's not him thinking through this. It's that he goes off script sometimes. And when he goes off script is when you actually get his real thoughts, which really are akin to those of a fifth grader, I've always maintained. I don't give him any credit. I'm sorry, Hody, but I would give him credit as a salesman. He's very charismatic. I give him credit for that. Let's catch up on some of the comments. Chris Townsend. What sucks is the left and right wingers dox libertarians any and every time we tell them to spit out the Kool-Aid and call out the atrocities. I agree with that. Magner, I see the same thing with patriot, with liberty, or freedom as well. Those terms are tarnished. Chris again. I agree, Big John. Noticed that back in 2016-ish. Yeah, the sort of... the way that's it. Let's see. Free. I'm with Jacob. I use the word patriot in an effort to reclaim it. I could certainly agree with that. I try to reclaim. Fight. Yeah, I try to reclaim conservative for the conservatives, you know, like, especially when it comes to economics. It's a hard task. Trump is not smart. He is skilled in narcissistic manipulation, but it has a deep-seated foundation in his ego. Oh, I don't know. Chris, are you a psychiatrist or a psychologist? That would make for a good show if you are. And then, let's see, one last one.
I would contend that being egotistical does not necessarily mean you're stupid. But
fair enough.
Yeah.
Big John will be on Are You Smarter Than a Politician tomorrow, 8 p.m. Thank you, Free and Terry. Appreciate you helping me remind the folks. Yes, I will be on that game show tomorrow night. Before we sign off, Hody, Jacob, any last thoughts on our conversation today?
Yeah, I mean, I think something that we kind of touched on through several, you know, while we were talking about all this stuff is the importance of holding your own people accountable. We can't fix the other side, and they're not going to take our criticisms. I'm not friendly with Republicans and Democrats, so they're not going to take anything I have to heart, right?
Sure.
But I am friendly with Christians and libertarians, right? So, like, an anarchist. And so we need to, if I see bad behavior from the circles that we're in, we need to fix it, right? Like, that's on us. It's really easy to fall into the trap of pointing out everybody's faults, right? But we just got to say, like, you know what? Their faults are going to be their faults. And if me yelling at them isn't going to change it, then it's only reinforcing them over there. And we do need to do better about, you know, looking inside at libertarians and just being like, man, am I seeing any libertarians being ghoulish about Charlie Kirk? Am I seeing any libertarians being ghoulish about Charlie Kirk's victims? right? Am I seeing any dismissals, you know, of any of those things? As Christians, like, obviously, you guys talk about reclaiming a word. Trying to reclaim Christianity has been an uphill battle, but we are doing our best, right? Like, it's tough. But, you know, I just think that that's something we should really focus on. When these moments of tragedy are there, we're going to see some disgusting things from the other sides. It's appropriate to call it out, I think, sure. But if we're going to actually, like, focus our efforts into fixing something, that's only going to come by us fixing ourselves. And if we become a good movement, like, if we become a movement where we're not the ghouls, then all of a sudden we become very appealing, right? That's, like, by focusing inward, that's how we'll do our best evangelism outward.
There you go. Jacob?
Yeah, I guess I'll repeat something that I kind of, I guess I said a little bit here, and I spent a lot of time going off on this on my stream last night, but I keep seeing people on the right say that, you know, freedom, that liberty, that free speech, libertarianism, it's been tried, it's been rejected, and, you know, again, like, if you see that claim, like, ask them what they mean. Like, when they say libertarianism is failing or whatnot, like ask them to give you nail down specifics, like, when and where in the last, you know, 30, 50, 100 years has America or any country, you know, actually engaged to any degree in libertarianism, because I haven't seen it. I mean, the closest that I think, you know, we have in at least semi-recent modern history is, like, the, you know, kind of early days of America. And even then, that wasn't perfect because we had slavery and oppressive of Native people. And, you know, we still, like, I was defending the Constitution earlier, but the Constitution still was, you know, very unlibertarian in certain ways. But, you know, to the extent that we had something like libertarianism, America grew and prospered, and it started to go on a trajectory of, like, realizing that its creed about, you know, people being made in the image of God with inalienable rights had to be extended to people groups that it had excluded. And it started to live up to its creed, and then it's but at the same time, then after World War II, it's not taken the warnings of the fathers, and it's become an empire trying to find enemies all over the world, you know, abroad and even at home, right?
And internally, yeah.
Yeah, internally. So, yeah, it just, libertarianism has not been tried. And I would say my white pill right now is that, as much as I think we kind of complained for the last 30 minutes about how duped a lot of right-wingers are, and I have plenty of criticisms to throw at the left, there are just as many people who are waking up to the fact that, like, hey, like, I was sold a certain bag of goods about, like, what this candidate, what this administration was going to do, and it didn't happen. Like, they lied. And I, like, once people realize that the government lied, that the politician that they voted for lied to them, that is the window of opportunity for us to come in and start introducing them to the libertarian worldview, right? And I think that if you're going to learn anything from the left, because I think there are things to learn from the left, and they, you know, did sort of, like, over many decades gain a, you know, quasi-hegemony in the media and in universities and education and in institutions and culture, they did that by just being persistent, right, and changing people's hearts and minds. And of course, we don't agree with a lot of their ideas, but, like, I feel like we, as libertarians, it was like we were small, then we started to grow with, like, you know, Harry Brown brought in a lot of people, Ron Paul brought in a lot of people, and then it's like, as soon as we get a little bit of resistance, people are going to throw in the towel. Like, I think it's time to redouble, retriple our efforts. I think it's, at the very least, not cede ground to the wannabe authoritarians who want to say that libertarianism has failed. You know, libertarianism is the only consistent expression of, you know, what I say, what we say at LCI is the only consistent expression of Christian political thought. I think libertarianism is just the only consistent expression of just, like, you know, objective reality and basic human decency and respect. And I don't think if you push anyone to actually think about what it would mean to live in a world where it's just might makes right, I don't know any rational person who actually is going to, you know, defend that and say, that's what I want to live in. So that's what I want to end on, is just a word of encouragement, just to say that, like, I don't think libertarianism has run its course. I think we're just getting started.
That's fantastic. I like that message as well. And Jacob, one last thing. Why don't you tell the folks about your stream and where they could follow you on X or anywhere else?
Yeah, so you can follow me on X at Biblical Anarchy. That's where I'm most active, but I'm also on Facebook and Instagram if you look up Biblical Anarchy Podcast. And if you go to biblicalanarchypodcast.com, you'll find my show, which is part of the Libertarian Christian Institute, part of our Christians for Liberty Network. I also run our social media over there and write articles. We're writing some books right now, so we have a lot of good stuff that's in the works. So if you are interested at all in the sort of like intersection between faith and freedom, you know, whether you are religious or if you're just curious about like, hey, you want to maybe like check our stuff out so you can recommend us as a resource to people who are curious about that. You can go to libertarianchristians.com and find out more.
Fantastic. Jacob Winograd, thank you so much for joining us. Hody, I know where I'll find you next week, right where you are right now, right about there, I would say. Yeah, right about there. Until next week, when you get the chance to listen to another episode of Free for All, for Hody and Jacob, this is Big John here on Grumblings Media, grumblingsmedia.com. We'll see you again next week. Peace, everyone.